and welcome to Technology and the Arts, a podcast exploring the connections between technology and art. This is your co-host, Brian Kelly. Episode 58 of the podcast features lightly edited audio from a live Google Plus Hangouts on Air that John Lemazne and I conducted October 22, 2012. In this installment, we discuss the Museum of Modern Art's YouTube video series on abstract expressionism and the documentary Searching for Sugar Man about obscure 1970s folk rocker Rodriguez, who was a manual laborer in Detroit, Michigan, while unknowingly a music superstar in South Africa for nearly 40 years. All that and more is just ahead on Technology and the Arts, Episode 58. Enjoy. Welcome to Technology and the Arts. I am Brian Kelly.
And I'm John Lemazne.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for asking. No, what I realized. I realized when I was editing that podcast today, not only did I say crazy about 75 times, but I also was like, I was just like in a whole other world when you said, how you doing? And I never thanked you and never said any, like, I was just like, I'm just trying to find this document. So it was on my mind to make sure I thanked you for when, and I did it very awkwardly.
You have to be one of the most polite people I know.
This is our second to last show for 2012, according to our plans. So,
yeah, certainly not our last show, but I got involved in about six projects more than I needed to. And so I think that we will have a hiatus for a bit before we continue in this way with this regularity. But I certainly see it coming back in the future.
And that's good because I'll talk about it some more next time, but I'll have my Tandem with the Random podcast coming back. I'm kind of rebranding it, refocusing some things. I have some ideas in my head that I'm excited about. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I think that you and I probably want to, like, we did this so spontaneously. Mm-hmm. And this is such a different series from what it was before. But it is more, I think, about the medium and the simplicity and offhandedness of that medium, more so than technology or art.
Yeah.
You know, we kept the name because that was ours, but it really spurred for me a whole different way of thinking about talking about topics and using the technology in sensible ways. And so I really want to say thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me and sort of getting me started on this new way of thinking.
Oh, no, thank you. And it's helped me as well. I mean, the live nature of it, it's funny. And it's one of the things I'm going to talk about briefly later on, but one of the podcasts I listen to is the Mustache Rangers. And I had, it's a comedy duo based out of Minneapolis. They do a series of podcasts that are hysterical. And one of the guys, was on my Tandem with the Random podcast as a guest, and
did you just say Phantom with the Random?
Tandem with the Random. No, I did not say Phantom.
But you said Phantom with the Random.
No, I did not say
that. Could be another whole, like, that could be like a Discovery Channel show.
Whatever. Anyway, you know, their whole show, their whole episode, their whole podcast is based on improv comedy, and they'll just sit around and somebody will say a word and then that, like, kind of just kicks off the podcast. And, you know, I was just amazed at that, you know, the way that they just record live, and a lot of it, you know, there isn't a lot of editing. They just are very confident in their ability to perform live. And I was like, oh, I can never do that. But, you know, this is kind of forcing me to not really care, you know, just wing it, I mean, just wing it and go with the flow. And it's really,
if we had to edit this, I mean, think about how much work you used to do in order to, you still do quite a bit of work for this, much more than I do on any of my other shows. And it's like, you know, if I had to do the amount of editing that you did on the previous podcast, on the previous series, it just wouldn't get done because the part of the beauty and allure of this is the simplicity of starting it up and, you know, maybe throwing a header on it.
Yeah. And it's amazing. That's what I've been noticing. Like when I go and turn these into podcasts now that, you know, there isn't a lot of editing. I mean, there are some, you know, long pauses and and stuff that I'm, you know, but you know, I'm kind of more lenient with that stuff now. You know, I'm not gonna sweat about it. It's, you know, we don't have the, and if there was somewhere where we got one on a tangent, I'll leave it out because it's not important for the audio podcast. But it's refreshing to hear how much, you know. You know, we both have, you know, improved. I mean, there'll never be an outtakes reel like the one from Technology and the Arts Generation 1.
Well, think about this. I mean, we have been doing this kind of thing for years and years.
Yeah, 2006. We started December 2006.
Yeah, that's insane. It really is. So, and I mean, you got a great deal of the bulk of the rest of the production experience. I mean, I more or less showed up and you know, did my talky bit and split. And you, meanwhile, like you were in the background doing blog posts and doing show notes and doing segments and doing interviews. And it's really amazing the amount of experience that you've gotten in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe next time around, maybe next year when we do this, we can, you know, it'll be planned out a little better. It won't be so spontaneous. Maybe we can, you know, get some guests involved and, you know, it'd be nice
this medium makes it really easy for that. You know, we just invite somebody else to the podcast. They don't even have to leave their house.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as they're okay with being spontaneous and don't mind being public and live, we're golden. You know, as a matter of fact, so many conversations I've been in where, you know, somebody will, like, for example, the Technology and the Fitness podcast, there is a Fitbit alternative, somebody who has the same kind of technology as the Fitbit, but they have more of a gamification thing on their site. Mm-hmm. They contacted me and they said, how would you like to review our product for free? You know, we're not asking you to pull any punches. We really believe in what we have, and we think that it's a good competitor to Fitbit. And I said, absolutely. I said, you know, maybe you'd like to come on and do an interview and do a demo of your product. And it seemed like a good idea to them. And that wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't have done it, certainly not in the same way. We wouldn't have been able to have a technology demo without some expense or some time or some effort or somebody coming in person. And as far as I know, this person's in China, you know, so it's like that wouldn't be able to happen very easily. And now, like, they are a typed email address away from being in the face of the viewer.
Wow. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It really is amazing the connections that this opens the doors to. So, all right. So, I know you mentioned you have one thing to talk about, and I really only have one major thing to talk about. So I guess, I just want to touch on a couple of other things. So why don't you, do you want to go first or?
Yeah. I guess we can leave it till later, but I do have one event that I really want to talk about. That is not the focus.
Not the SmackDown?
Yeah, about SmackDown. So tomorrow night, if you happen to be watching live, and I actually don't know how many viewers we have right now, probably one.
which is actually four less than one of the things I'm going to talk about later. Go ahead.
But at any rate, if you see this in the next 24 hours or so, well, not 24, but less than 24 hours, the big thing I'm really excited about is tomorrow night, myself and Kurt Williams in the Princeton area are going to be at Princeton Public Library at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock?
7 to 9. 7 to 9.
Yeah, 7 to 9. In the community room, we're going to be doing a SmackDown between iOS and Android. And of course, I'm going to represent Android, and Kurt is going to represent iOS. And he accepted really casually at the request of one Jamie Herman, one of my best friends in the world. And she's been a very good contact and a very good friend. And she always looks out for me and gives me opportunities to speak. And this was such a great opportunity to sit and talk about the Android operating system versus iOS, because I've had this conversation with Kurt privately so many times. And I've talked with you on this podcast about Apple, and I talked with Sean on the podcast about customer service about Apple. And it seems like it shows up all the time. I'm sort of defending alternatives to Apple. And I have Apple products, and I use Apple products, but there are certain things that are beneficial in Android, as far as I'm concerned, over iOS. So anyway, I'm going to get probably a full hour tomorrow night to be able to make my case, to state my case in a not a debate format, but a one-on-one presentation versus presentation. And it's going to be, at the end of the night, it's going to be determined by a plausometer. Which I thought was hilarious. So anyway, 7 to 9 tomorrow night, if you're in the Princeton area, it's free, and it's guaranteed to be a good time. We're going to have a lot of fun. And hopefully nobody cries at the end.
So I'll be like, oh, I wasn't saying boo. I was saying boo Lemazny.
Yeah, right, exactly right.
Sorry, that was a Simpsons reference that just went way wrong.
Yeah. Well, I don't really look like the
Boo Ernst. Boo Ernst.
So now I've got that out of the way, I'm going to go into the focus segment, unless you have anything to plug.
I'll wait till later.
All right. So let me just share my screen for a second. And I'm going to go to this video. So if you do a YouTube search on painting technique MoMA, M-O-M-A, or if you do a search for MoMA videos, M-O-M-A videos, of course, anybody who's ever been there knows that MoMA stands for the Museum of Modern Art, and they have this amazing series of videos that focus on painting techniques of the abstract expressionists. And the reason I think that these videos are so fantastic is because typically if someone talks about abstract expressionism or minimalism, they usually talk about it in theoretical terms. They don't talk about it in realistic physical terms. They don't talk about the technique necessarily. They usually talk about the ideology behind the technique. And they have painting techniques of Mark Rothko, and they have painting techniques of Barnett Newman, painting techniques of Jackson Pollock, painting techniques of Franz Kline, painting techniques of Rothko, as I said. And this one about Ad Reinhardt was the first one that I saw. I'm going to turn the audio down so we don't get the video pulled. Can you see that on my screen?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it goes into, for example, Ad Reinhardt's black painting, which incidentally there's a copy of at the Princeton Museum. It goes into these nine divisions on the canvas. It's either six or nine, actually. And it goes into technique after going through what we should be looking at when we look at this painting, including, you know, photos of Ad Reinhardt doing the painting, and then a recreation by this gentleman, Corey D'Agostino, I think his name was, where he takes a small canvas and talks about the materials used. And I just thought it was a beautiful way to explain why this is legitimate, you know, because that's one of the things that often comes out of someone's first encounter with abstract expressionism is, why would anybody do this? Or why is my five-year-old's painting not up on the wall? Or why is this legitimate? And the way that it's explained is so beautiful and down to earth and simple that I just thought it did a great job. So go to MoMA Videos on YouTube and look for their ABEXNY series, in which they go through the painting techniques of abstract expressionists. I thought this was a really good example of using technology much in the same way that we are in order to bring light to an artistic endeavor.
Excellent. I will check that out.
Good.
I just remembered one other thing, but you, what you're talking about kind of segues better. So I'll just go and that'll be my rant. I've come to find that I usually go on rants towards the end of these. And I didn't realize that was like a pattern, but apparently it is, because I did went on the rant about Star Wars in I think it was the second episode, and maybe it was the first episode, I don't remember. Then I went on the rant about CNN messing up the Affordable Care Act Supreme Court ruling, the decision in the fourth episode. So I'll save my rant for later. But
yeah, we don't want to break with segment.
Yeah. So I'm talking about, you know, technology and kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier about how this medium allows us to do this. And I watched, I had a kind of a vested interest in both. My friend Christian Beach, singer-songwriter from New Jersey, a longtime friend.
Heartthrob.
One time music collaborator and a former technology in the arts guest. And except for our little take on the technology in the arts theme song that one time.
Yeah, I don't know why I ever agreed to that. I'm embarrassed about that. Because you are a seasoned, regular, ongoing musician, and I picked up my guitar like the day before we did that and was like, oh, I'm going to play and it's going to get recorded for all time.
Yeah, but it was our podcast, so nobody heard it. Yeah, so anyway, That one actually was popular.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that.
But that wasn't the one that had your playing on it, so that was okay.
It all works out then.
But the Christian Beach's interview was popular. But he did the only, you know, live musical performance on our, well, not live, but you know what I mean. Yeah. In studio musical performance.
If he was here tonight, it would be a live musical performance.
Yes.
And here he is.
Yeah. You know what? I'll try to do that next time around. You know, hopefully by next year. But that was the thing. He recorded a set for Blow Up Radio. There's this guy, Laszlo, who hosts Blow Up Radio on Live 365. And
is Laszlo the guy who used to do the Metallica sports show on 93.3?
No, not him. No, no.
Okay.
I know.
I think he ended up working at a bar down in Memora.
I don't know. But anyway, this guy, his wife suffers from spondylitis, which is a chronic disease affecting the joints and neck, back, even sometimes the hips. And he has this weekend-long webathon. He has – sometimes it's a live set. Sometimes, in the case of Christian, Christian came in and recorded it in advance. And then, you know, he schedules it all, you know – for this weekend webathon, and he sets up a link with the Spondylitis Association of America. He gives you a compilation CD of like all the, and it's a download of all the of songs from the participating artists for a contribution. He does it every year, and he does a pretty good job with it. So, you know, Christian's been doing it, I don't know if he's been doing it every year, but he's, I know he's done it at least 2 or 3 years now that I know of. And so he was performing again last night. It was like 6:05 PM Eastern time. And so tuned into that. And it was nice that I could, you know, I haven't talked to Christian in over a year. The last time I actually talked to him was, back in, last September. I played accordion on a couple of songs when he played at Buddy's Tavern in, Parlin, New Jersey. And, I think it was September 2011. And, you know, I hadn't seen him since. I talked to him on Facebook, whatever, but talk, you know. But, you know, it was nice to hear some new stuff from him. And, you know, it just was cool that, you know, that this guy puts his passion is New Jersey music, and he has this radio station that, he has dedicated to New Jersey artists. And, you know, it's, you know, a nice way to, you know, promote and support, those artists. And it's just nice that the technology allows that. And then the other thing, last night was, the Mustache Rangers again. They celebrated the 250th episode, of their podcast, by doing a live show. They do live shows all the time at this, mostly at the huge improv theater in Minneapolis where they're based. And that's where the Mustache Rangers showed up. Basically the premise, which I found out during my interview, the Mustache Rangers started, it was like a gag during one of their shows. They left the stage and then came back wearing fake mustaches as the Mustache Rangers who had kidnapped them. Like they kidnapped themselves and said it was like these two other people. So that's how the Mustache Rangers were born. So, they did this live podcast. And what was funny is that, they're like, they tell the audience, oh, we're not only, doing this live for you guys, but we're doing it for 5 viewers. They had 5 people watching, but I was one of them. So, I was loyal to them, but I find them hysterical. I think they're, I was talking about the spiders that are in my house, and one of the recent episodes.
You were talking before the show started.
Yes, I know.
You didn't say anything about.
I think them. I have mentioned in the past, maybe not, but there are some huge spiders wandering around.
There's
but,
one right there. You see that one?
Yeah. So, if you do see a spider behind me, please let me know, like for real. And so anyway, one of the recent episodes, it was, a spider was on their ship wearing a hat, wearing a fedora, but it wasn't the spider that's on the ship wearing a baseball hat. You know, that's a pet. It's stupid, but it's funny. I find it hysterical. So it's just cool though that we have this era where we can, we can put stuff like this on the internet, and we're mostly entertaining ourselves, but hopefully we're entertaining a few other people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't get more niche than what we do,
Yeah.
And it's really fun and interesting that we don't have to have anybody approve it. Nobody cares about whether or not I'm allowed to turn on my camera and broadcast it. That is an amazing, amazing thing.
Yep. And that was the other thing too. I mean, these guys, they did it exactly the way we would have done it. They just put a laptop, or I don't know if it was an iPad or whatever, but I think it was a laptop. They just brought it with them, put it on the stage, just use the camera from that. It was like totally like zero production values and just put it on Ustream. So it was,
there's nothing wrong with that though.
No, there isn't. It made me love it even more that they did it like that. It was really nice to see that where somebody didn't, just said, we're going to do this, but we're not going to spend a lot of money on it. I guess the second to last thing, but the big thing I wanted to talk about was, have you heard about this musician, Rodriguez?
No.
I didn't either.
Is his first name musician?
It's no. His first name is apparently Sixto.
But Sixto? He's a musician named Sixto Rodriguez.
Yeah, he goes by Rodriguez. But just hold tight for a second. So I heard this. We always have like the radio on in our house. We have XPN on, WXPN out of Philadelphia, and there was a encore performance or encore presentation of World Cafe on.
Not live. Not live.
Not live. Yeah, an encore presentation of World Cafe.
Not live
with David Dye, had these guys on who were responsible for finding Rodriguez. And this is crazy. In 1970, he put out an album called Cold Fact, I believe. I should probably get that. Let me see if I can get the...
Maybe you can even bring it up to me.
Yeah. I'm going to do a screen share. Hold on. I'm going to do a screen share. So, this was a photo from his 1971, his second album, 1971 album, Coming From Reality. So, he put out a album in 1970, Cold Fact, and it was on the same label as, Bill Withers. And he had a lot of people behind him, a lot of influential people. A lot of people thought he had, he had what it took to be like an inner city, Dylan. He was from Detroit. But the first album went nowhere. Second album, 1971, they took some guy who believed in him still, took him over to England, recorded a second album.
Sorry. I just want to say, at the moment, I'm far more interested that NPR Music has an iPad app.
Oh. Sorry.
It's so aggravating. Very aggravating.
So, I was trying to see if there are better images here. But so, anyway, the second album fails. And ironically enough, there's one of the songs on that album has a lyric saying something about it 2 weeks before Christmas, or got fired 2 weeks before Christmas or something like that. And his record label dropped him 2 weeks before Christmas after the second album came out.
I wonder if they scattered that trash behind him artistically.
He's from Detroit, so chances are it was there.
Okay.
But there's probably a fire off to the right. But anyway, there go the Detroit viewers.
Viewer.
Yeah. Actually, I think we're being a little – there's nobody watching in Detroit. So he basically phased into obscurity. Hardly anybody bought the record in the United States. But – in the late 70s, early 80s, he starts getting some airplay in Australia and New Zealand and does a tour. He actually toured with Midnight Oil for a little bit.
Yeah.
Back, I think, in like 80, 81, somewhere around there.
Okay.
But after that, it was over again. And that was it. I mean, his brief popularity in Australia and New Zealand faded away. And so he was back in Detroit as a manual laborer doing demolition, construction, odd jobs here and there, basically living at or near poverty and or in or near poverty.
He was living in or near poverty.
Yeah, and this is when he had, an album out. So while this is happening, in the mid to late 70s, a bootleg copy of Cold Fact wound up getting in the hands of, I guess, a DJ in South Africa, or just in record stores in South Africa. Somehow, this bootleg got duplicated and sold in South Africa. And he became an icon, really, during, you know, especially the anti-apartheid movement. He became an inspirational figure. And, you know, that album was on par with Abbey Road in South Africa. South Africans idolized them. And they didn't know much about him. But somehow this story came around that he had killed himself on stage, either shot himself in the head or set himself on fire. But as far as South Africans knew,
the difference between shooting yourself in the head on stage and setting yourself on fire.
Well, that was like part of the mystery about him. Like they even came up with these conflicting myths about how he killed himself on stage, but that was the common thing, that he killed himself on stage, but they had like these differing thoughts on what happened. So the Africans just assumed he was dead, and, you know, but still enjoyed his music. Everybody, and then somehow, now we're back. Now we're in 1998. These two fans, and it got together somehow and decided, you know, we should find out what happened.
You mean like romantically?
Huh? No, they got together. These two fans got together. And decided, you know, we should find out what happened to him. You know, once and for all, how did he kill himself? So they start poring over his lyrics and see a reference to Dearborn. And realize that he must be from Detroit. So,
was it not well known that he was from Detroit before?
No, because in South Africa, they were bootleg copies. I don't think they had the liner notes. I mean, I don't know. They just had a name and they had the songs and maybe some cover art, but maybe the rest of the information was incomplete. But it took them all that time to even find the producer of the album. And they eventually got in touch with that person, and they're like, you know, oh, so, you know, when did, you know, how did, exactly did he die? You know, we've heard all these different stories, and he's like, he didn't die. He lives down the street. I just saw him this morning. And it turns out, you know, all this time, he was this huge music star in South Africa, and he had no idea because all the sales were based off of bootleg copies. And I guess somehow in South Africa, companies had arranged for the rights, but they weren't arranged through the proper channels, or else he would have been getting royalty checks. So the guys who hunted him down, and, you know, they call him and say, you know, your album's like Abbey Road. Your album is like the Abbey Road of South Africa. And he, you know, he had a hard time believing them, obviously, but, you know, eventually, you know, he started listening. And at the same time, his daughter found a website devoted to his music, you know, that and the website was based in South Africa. And so he, quickly arranged tour was put together for him to go to South Africa with a band. And, you know, thousands of people showed up, and luckily his drummer realized like something special was going on, and had a friend film it. And now,
wait a second. They had thousands of people show up and the video camera was an afterthought.
Yeah. Cause they didn't really know. I mean, even though they were told what was happening in South Africa all these years, you know, they went over there. They're like,
so what I don't understand, though, is what the romantic couple had to do with this.
There was no romantic couple. I said they were fans. They were two fans.
And they got together, you said.
Yeah, it was like a fan club thing. I don't know.
And then you brought up this part about
I just found out about this yesterday. I'm trying to catch up. All I know, these two guys who were fans,
Oh, well, now it's a gay couple. There goes the rest of our viewers. Nice going, Brian.
Yeah, it's my fault. Yeah, I'll tell you who's going to be booing back, you know. Oh, Android. Android's the best. Boo! Boo!
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah. So, anyway. No, so they realize something special's happening, and they the drummer arranges for a friend to start filming these shows and what's going on. And now it's been turned into a documentary called Searching for Sugar Man, because that's one of the lead track on his album is
so
Sugar Man.
His name is Sixto.
He goes by Rodriguez.
He goes by Rodriguez. And he has another nickname, Sugar Man?
That was the title of the first song on his first album. So anyway, it's the subject of a documentary that is getting, you know, rave reviews. It was at Sundance. It's been at major, you know, film festivals, winning all sorts of awards, accolades. And he's been on, it's been featured on 60 Minutes. He was on David Letterman over the past few months. Obviously, you saw the NPR story, 60 Minutes, which I may have just said, and I can't remember. But it's a real fascinating story. And I guess the technology angle isn't that it's,
that this is the part I was waiting for.
It's the fact that if the technology had existed, this never would have happened. You know, the internet would have connected the dots a lot sooner. And I think it's just it's kind of a testament to the internet and allowing that for that. I mean, we always talk about, oh, and you know, how did we ever look stuff up in the pre-internet days? And there's a case study. It was hard. It was difficult. You know, it was incomplete. And
still incomplete.
Yeah, but it's really, you take it for granted nowadays. But he went nearly 40 years as a major star in South Africa, and had no idea that this was going on, and they thought he was dead. I mean, that's what the thing is. I mean, it's not even just, oh, the guy that we've listened to all these years is coming to South Africa. This guy's back from the dead to them. And it's just, it's really fascinating. And, I was listening to the album today. It's really great. I mean, I don't know. And people tell you, they don't know how this album did not make a dent on the U.S. charts. I mean, one of the guys in the video, the guy gets asked, you know, how many copies did he sell? And he's like, six. So, I mean, and then this happens. I mean,
well, I mean, that's a little bit of a statement too about how influential the recording industry had been all that time. You know, it was about radio play and about advertising and about shows and about support. And now it's less so about any of those things. It's still about advertising to some degree. You know, sometimes the first time you see somebody on David Letterman, for example, is the reason why you decide that you're going to listen more to that artist. But mm-hmm. How much more is it about, you know, your favorite independent music blog or, you know, Spotify brings something to your attention because it's related to something else that you already know that you like. Yeah. So much less about the RIA.
Yeah, it's
and you rant.
Well, it's funny, he's going to be at World Cafe in the next few weeks, and it sold out right after that 60 Minutes piece aired last month. So, and he was at Newport Folk Festival, and I have some friends of ours were there, and I asked them if they had seen him. I was hoping to get a report from them, and they didn't know his story at that time.
Oh.
And now they wish that they did, but Yeah, so anyway, it's just fascinating, and I can't wait to see the documentary. It sounds great. I mean, it's such a crazy story. Oh, I said crazy. Damn. Yeah.
We're working on 35 minutes at this point.
Okay, but real quick, my rant. Those Orionids, the meteor shower this past weekend.
Yeah.
What an epic fail.
What?
I was up. First of all, I saw some, you know, terrible source apparently, had it like, for viewing between 12 and 2, 12 a.m. and, you know, 12 midnight and 2 a.m. Eastern time, local time, you know. I think it was like a patch, one of the patch.com, branches or whatever coverage areas, and they hinted that 12 to 2 would be the primary time. So I'm outside from like 12:20, about a half hour goes by, and I'm like, I saw some like very faint, that who knows if they were even part of the meteor shower. They may have just been strays, but just faint
streaks of light. Multiple spontaneous stray meteors during a meteor shower?
You can. If you go on Twitter,
yeah,
I mean,
you can. But I would think that they would definitely be part of the meteor shower if you saw. I mean, how often do you see?
But they weren't. Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you're in an area where there's no light. If you're out in the desert, I mean, you see stuff all the time. I mean, we're always going through dust trails.
Sure.
You know, it's just the fact that the light, you know, because we're in such a heavy pollute. You know, there's a lot of light pollution in this area. You know, we don't see that. But, you know, here I am looking at the stars for like 20 minutes at a time, so my eyes are becoming more attuned. And so I was seeing like just faint streaks, but you know, the thing is they were saying, oh, they were going to be, you know, it was going to be a spectacular show and, you know, really playing it up, you know, so many per hour. So then I'm like, okay, about a half hour goes by. I'm outside still. I'm checking my phone and I see another source that says between 3 and 5 a.m. on the East Coast. So I'm like, all right. So I go and get into bed. I sleep with my contacts in for a couple hours, and I wake up around 3.
Were these the red contacts?
No.
Did you wear the special star viewing red contacts?
No. So I get outside again at like 3:15, and again, I stay out for a half hour. Absolutely nothing. Again, maybe one very faint streak of light, but no, I mean, I've seen meteor showers before. I've seen pretty decent meteor showers before, but not in ages, like probably in my 20s was the last time I saw a really good one. And I haven't seen one since. It's always been cloudy. You know, I just, you know, for whatever reason, I just want to see one again. And this was such a fail. I mean, yeah, I only gave it like, you know, combined hour, maybe a little over that, but saw absolutely nothing. And it was so hyped. I mean, all I could read was how it was going to be, you know, all these many per hour.
Did you happen to come across any reports of anybody having a successful experience?
Yeah. Somebody, Mike Black, who's a photographer, musician, all around Renaissance man, really. He's based, I think in Belmar, but he's like part of the Asbury music scene. He actually opened when, Christian and I saw the Tony Levin band at the Saint, back in 2005 or 2006 or so. I can't remember, but he actually opened for them.
So how do you account for the difference in your experiences?
Well, you know, he was probably somewhat further away from light sources. I was outside my house. I was going to go somewhere, but, you know, with the baby, it's, you know, I didn't want to go too far if my wife needed help. So, I just went outside my house, and it was pretty dark, but I just did not see, you know, again, maybe I just had to stay up all night. You know, I'm sure he did, but, he's also, I don't know if you remember, but remember when we had that huge snowfall, a couple of years ago, it was like 20 some odd inches, and, you may have seen it on the news or on YouTube. He had a, time lapse.
Yeah.
Going into the, on his back porch. And
it was in, if you take 195 all the way out.
Yeah. Belmar.
Yeah. Belmar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Mike Black. Yeah. He contributes a lot to CNN. He's really into the space program too. He made some contributions to this fund that they that NASA is behind, and he has like a bunch of pictures on his site. He was at dinners with, you know, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin just months ago. So I mean, it was kind of cool that he got to, you know, meet Neil Armstrong before he passed away. So he's a real interesting guy.
Maybe we should talk to him sometime.
Yeah, no, I never think about it, but yeah, he's, you know, he's in the music scene. A lot of my friends, you know him. I've met him a couple of times, but I'm not real tight with him. But he's a very interesting person.
Well, I think that's probably the perfect person for an interview for us, because it's, you know, you're not so close that you feel like you know everything about them.
Yeah. So that was my tire. I'm like winding down. I can feel myself winding down. So I guess I will see you tomorrow night, watching you
cool.
Get owned.
Yeah, I don't think
owned.
So. I don't think so.
By the iOS crap. That was a link I saw today too, about researchers found all these third party. Let's see if I can find it. Just to give you a heads up. It was on Gizmodo. Researchers reveal massive encryption faults in Android apps used by millions.
I don't know. It's pretty hard to break encryption.
Do you see that?
That sounds like, yeah, I can see it. It sounds like it's hyped. What's the detail?
So, researchers reveal massive encryption faults in Android apps used by millions.
I read that part.
A team of computer science researchers have revealed that Android apps used by as many as 185 million people can expose online banking and social network credentials, as well as emails and IM content. Researchers from Germany's Leibniz University of Hanover and Philips University of Marburg have identified 41 apps available on the Play Store, which leak sensitive information as it travels between phones and servers. The team recreated real-life app use on a local area network and then used existing security exploits to garner confidence.
So wait a second. They're talking about specific applications?
Yes. The researchers haven't identified which apps are at fault, though they do note that some of them have been downloaded up to 185 million times. They do hint at the kind of software they found was insecure, though, detailing examples of the vulnerabilities they found. Ars Technica gives a roundup. One is an antivirus app that accepted invalid certificates when validating the connection supply.
So, in other words, none of this has to do with Android. It has to do with apps that happen to be on the Android platform.
Yeah, on the Google Play Store or whatever.
Yeah, but what I don't understand is how that would be held against Android. I mean, I'm sure that I wonder, actually, if the same apps are present on the iPhone.
It's possible. But they,
generic, using language like generic online banking apps seem to suggest that these are third-party apps, not official software from the websites they connect to. The research, this is silly.
Well, I mean, that's the problem is people are going to download stupid crap on their phones instead of official apps, you know?
Yeah. This is periphery at best.
I just want you to be aware of it.
I hope.
Somebody might mention it.
I hope it gets brought up.
So you're going to smack them down.
I'm going to smack them down.
You're going to be an Android. Smack them down.
It's going to be sad tomorrow.
I was winding down, and now I'm just getting punchy.
Punchy. All right, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is a good thing we have only one more of these left. This is probably the worst one we've done.
It is 11 o'clock.
Okay.
11 o'clock. Told you.
Yeah. One more Stephen Hawking appearance. Professor Balkin. How about a nice game of chess?
He's a genius, man.
All right. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
That concludes this episode of Technology and the Arts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit technologyandthearts.com. Like us at facebook.com/technologyandthearts. Follow us on Twitter at @tech_arts. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/technologyandthearts. Thank you for listening.